It's Lynn Rossetto Casper with The Splendid Table. Today, a teen and her dad cook their way around the world. The dad is Chef Rick Bayless. The teen is 13-year-old Lainey Bayless, and she's definitely got her own style at the stove. Their book is Rick and Lainey's Excellent Kitchen Adventures. Well, the Sterns are at a corner bar in Milwaukee celebrating that Wisconsin classic, the Friday Night Fish Fry. The man behind America's Test Kitchen gives the latest coffee makers a run for their money. World beat guru Bob Duskus has music to cook by, eat by, and most important of all, clean up by. Then it's the couch potato approach to wine appreciation. What to drink with reality TV. All this and your calls coming up on The Splendid Table. But first, this.
Thank you.
Hi, it's Lynn Rossetto Casper, and you're listening to The Splendid Table, the show for people who love to eat. Our program is produced by American Public Media and brought to you by Super Target. Well, today it's a new kitchen duo, a teenager and a chef. The teenager is 13-year-old Lainey Bayless. The chef is her dad, Rick Bayless, of Mexican food fame. This duo has been cooking around the world since Lainey was 7. Their book is Rick and Lainey's Excellent Kitchen Adventures. When we want to know what's worth the money and what's not, we go to Christopher Kimball of Cooks Illustrated and America's Test Kitchen. Well, today he checks out the new coffee makers. We've got world beat music to cook and clean up by. Then it's wine pairing for wee couch potatoes. What to drink with Survivor, The Apprentice, etc. And as always in the second half of the show, we're going to be opening the lines for your calls. Now you can get to us at 800-537-5252. So let's get things rolling the way we do every week with Jane and Michael Stern, brought to you by Starbucks, a passion for the perfect cup. The Sterns write the road food column in Gourmet magazine. Hey, Jane, Michael, have you been in our neck of the woods in the Midwest? You know, have you found any new places?
Lynn, we recently went to Milwaukee on a fish fry hunt. Now, you know, there are a lot of places throughout the Midwest and even as far east as, say, Buffalo, New York, where fish fries are an important part of the culture. Nowhere is fish fry bigger than in Milwaukee, where virtually every restaurant in town, and I mean the Jewish delis, the German places, the French places, every restaurant has a Friday night fish fry.
You know, I realize, I know I live next door in Minnesota, but is this where it's local fish and they just sort of deep fry it like a Midwest fish and chips? Is that how it is?
Basically, yes. I mean, different restaurants in Milwaukee have different kinds of fish. Some have cod, some have perch. One of the best places we found is a really inconspicuous corner tavern called Klinger's East, where they not only have cod and perch, they also have locally caught schmelt, which you and I might say smelt, but we were corrected on that by a local. It's called schmelt, and the schmelt fishermen catch this, and it's part of the fish fry on Friday nights there.
It reminds me of a schmear or schmaltz, but I guess that is how you say it.
What is a schmelt? It's a little fish, isn't it?
It's a little fish, and I have to say it's really for fish lovers. It has a very assertive kind of oily, fishy flavor. I think it's delicious. I mean, if you like fish, you will love this stuff.
Is it sardine-y at all?
It's like more like a fresh sardine or a fresh herring. I mean, it's got a real kind of luscious, oily character, which when it's fried is all the better, you know. And on the side of the schmelt at Klinger's East, you get either French fries, which are very good, or better yet, a plate of potato pancakes that are made there.
Uh-oh.
Nothing's better than that.
Now, Michael, this is a Friday thing. And so don't go there during the week. And
so you have to go on Friday. So yes. What do they serve with the potato pancakes? I'm now in carb heaven, by the way. But
Yay.
Do they serve applesauce or that kind of stuff with it?
You can get applesauce and or sour cream with the potato pancakes. I like just a dab of applesauce. One of the things we've got to tell you, though, about Klinger's East is that it is a pool hall / tavern, the likes of which in any other part of the country, none of us would probably even dare walk into. It's dark, kind of gloomy and foreboding from the outside. However, you walk in and to the left are the pool tables, and to the right are big, happy Milwaukee families sitting down to eat schmelt and cod and perch. So it's kind of incongruous in the sense that it doesn't look at all like a family restaurant, but indeed it is.
Actually, it's funny because the way we found this place is one of our road food correspondent, somebody who emails us, said we had to come out and he would take us to Klinger's East, which had the best schmelz and fish fry. And we met him and he was this young, punky looking guy with like every inch of his body, including part of his face, tattooed. And we took one look at him and then we took one look at Klinger's, and Michael and I said,
we're in trouble.
We better get out of here. But it was very wholesome and above board and delicious.
See, that's what you get for prejudging.
I know.
Hey, this sounds great. Thanks, guys.
Bye, Lynn.
Oh, Milwaukee, what a place to be. dancing. Thank you for all the things you've done for me.
The Stearns are authors of that indispensable guide, Road Food. Now, they're here every week, but you can get their food finds anytime. Just go to the website, splendidtable.org. And while you're on the site, check out our weekly newsletter. It's called Weeknight Kitchen. It's brought to you by the Farmers of Organic Valley. Now, every week we send you a new recipe, and we also send along shopping and technique tips. And best of all, it's free. Now, you can register for it online, you know where, splendidtable.org. Cook's Illustrated magazine takes no advertising and takes no prisoners when it comes to testing out kitchen equipment. Like Consumer Reports, they test every aspect of how an implement is supposed to function, and they report their findings. The brains behind this singular approach to a food magazine is the editor and creator of Cook's Illustrated magazine, Christopher Kimball. You may have seen him on Cook's companion TV show, America's Test Kitchen. Chris, it's good to have you back.
My pleasure.
Chris, I walk through equipment stores and I see all of these new styled coffee makers. Now, aren't they really any different from the old, you know, drip perk pots?
Well, the one thing they are is incredibly confusing because every month it seems like someone's invented a new way to make coffee. Only in America can we find 26 different ways to brew a cup of coffee. I mean, it's just amazing to me. Well, the first category, the grind and brew, which I guess sort of sounds like fun. I mean, hey, you put the beans in, it grinds
right,
them and
right.
brews it. They got timers. It's, you know, very high tech. We really didn't love any of these machines. We tested three, Cuisinart, a Melitta, and a Capresso. The big problem is when you make an American-style coffee, you want the ground beans to be in contact with the very hot water for 4 to 6 minutes.
Uh-huh.
Now, there are hundreds of compounds in coffee, I think 700 or 800 compounds. You want to extract some of those, but not all of them, because if you over-extract, you get that bitter taste. These machines, in general, took about 10 minutes. So you had over-extraction, at least in our tests. And as a result, we didn't think it made a great cup of coffee. So despite the sex appeal of grind and brew,
right.
None of them were highly recommended. None of those machines were near the top of our list.
Okay, what would be another type?
Well, the sexiest and newest version is the single cup brewers. Melitta, for example, makes one. We also tested one by Keurig, K-E-U-R-I-G. These run, and the Melitta's around $60, and then the Keurig was actually $250.
For one cup of coffee?
One at a time. You have to make your money back one cup at a time on that one.
Mm-hmm.
There's a problem with this, which is that you have to get these little pre-sealed ground coffee canisters.
Right.
And then put them in little pods. And in some cases, they have a few available. In other cases, there are quite a few available. We thought it made decent American-style coffee. That is a little bit on the light side. And the good news is you can make it, you know, to order. But we didn't think the coffee was great. It was good, but not great.
Okay.
Now, the last category, which is one I actually use at home, and it's a very old-fashioned notion. It's the vacuum brewers. Matter of fact, in old movies from the 40s and 50s, you sometimes see them in the background. They were used in England, I think invented in 1849, and they were stovetop. They're two glass carafes, one on top of the other. The water goes in the bottom. The grounds go on the top. You apply heat, and the water gets sucked up by vacuum to the top, or it sits in the grounds and then drips back down. Black & Decker makes one now. It's plastic, not glass, for
mm-hmm.
about $70. And Bodum also makes one for about $100. We like these. They make very good coffee. The brew time is about right. There is a programmable aspect to it as well. The only downside is you have to let the coffee, if you're going to not drink it right away, sit on the hot plate. And that's a really bad idea because coffee deteriorates pretty quickly. So if you pour this coffee into a thermos to store it, it makes great coffee. And some of the, by the way, the grounding brews, they now drip into thermoses.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Which solves the problem of sort of the Mr. Coffee hot plate, where after 5 minutes the coffee's undrinkable. So we like the vacuum the best. They're reasonably priced. As long as you take the freshly made coffee and then store it in a separate thermos, then we really like those a lot.
All right, but here's the big question. Which is more important, the quality of the beans or the quality of the coffee maker?
That's like a Zen koan, isn't it?
Hey,
I
didn't say this was going to be easy, Chris.
Well, actually, there's a million things, but the brew time, that is the time the ground beans are in touch with the water, is very, very important. But there's a whole bunch of other things. Certainly the beans, how recently were they roasted? Some people actually roast their beans at home. You can buy roasting machines, which sort of work. How you store the beans. We found that storing it in an airtight container up to 2 weeks at room temperature is the best method, and then after that you have to put it in the freezer. Sure, there's a lot of things, but the temperature of the water, it should be at the right temperature, and how long it's in contact with the ground beans is really important. And then how you store the coffee once it's made. Those are three of the most important aspects.
So the vacuum pot is the winner in this case.
Well, vacuum pot is the winner.
Hey, thank you.
My pleasure.
Christopher Kimball is editor and publisher of Cooks Illustrated and hosts PBS's America's Test Kitchen. Now you can find Chris's coffee maker picks on the website, splendidtable.org. I got a timely email question from a listener. Now they asked, can I spice up store-bought pie crust? It's already in the pan, so mixing and flavorings won't work. And don't tell me to make one from scratch. It'll never happen. Okay, no lectures on the romance of homemade. Now, wherever you get it, think of pie crust this way. It's a neutral element, and it can take some character. Now, one way to do it is press flavorings into the crust. You can use the back of your hand or your palm. The idea is to do something that heightens the filling. So for savory pies or quiche, you could press in minced onions, fresh herbs, spicy pumpkin seeds, maybe bacon, chili, curry powder, that kind of stuff. For sweet pies, try nuts, brown sugar, spices, crushed candy, or shredded zest, you know, citrus zest. Now, if you pre-bake the crust and you spread it with melted chocolate and sprinkle it with nuts and let it harden, you can do hot fudge sundae pie. All you do is pile up the vanilla ice cream, and when you're ready to serve it, top it with hot fudge, whipped cream, and don't forget the cherries. Coming up, a chef and a teen mix it up in the kitchen and inspired music to wash dishes by. I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper. You're listening to The Splendid Table from American Public Media. I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper, and this is The Splendid Table, the show about life's appetites. The Splendid Table is brought to you by SuperTarget, home of Archer Farms, where you can find modern takes on old-time classics like angel food cake, quiche, and garlic bread. Find them online at target.com/SuperTarget. Rick Bayless is a famous chef, a Mexican food expert. He's also a dad. His daughter is 13-year-old Lainey, and she and Rick have done their first cookbook together. Lainey speaks her mind, Rick speaks his. It's called Rick and Lainey's Excellent Kitchen Adventures. Lainey, Rick, welcome.
Oh, thank you
Thanks.
Very much.
It's great to be here.
Selene, I have to ask you this. Are you pressured to do this book with your dad, or?
Oh my gosh, we both laughed.
I was definitely not pressured into doing it. It was totally my choice. I thought the experience that I got out of it was great.
Now, this is all about traveling together, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And have you guys kept diaries on all of these trips?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And Deanne, my wife, Lainey's mother, is really big on making us at the end of the day say exactly what the high points, low points of the day were, exactly what we've experienced. And then we would write all of that stuff down, and that became the fodder for this book.
Now, for you, Lainey, I gather Mexico is a place you're pretty comfortable, right?
Definitely, definitely.
Yeah. But what for you was the strangest experience, or the one that perhaps you were the most concerned about before you got there?
I definitely think that would be Morocco, because we went on the January after 9/11, and everyone was scared about it because it was an Arab country. And like I told my friends, and they're like, "You're really going to that kind of country?" And they were scared for me, and I was a little bit scared too. But it turned out to be a great experience, and we had so much fun there.
Well, we went because of 9/11. We didn't actually have it on our docket to go there. We had gotten fully into doing this book, and we weren't sure exactly what countries we were going to include.
Mm-hmm.
But after 9/11, we realized that one of the places that we had to go was to an Islamic country so that we could experience sharing a table with people that were being portrayed as people that were the enemy. And I didn't want to think of them as the enemy. I knew that there were people there that loved life the way that we love life, and they love food the way that we love food. And I wanted to have the experience of going into a market and leveling the playing field, which is what always happens when it comes to food.
Yeah, yeah. This is a book about your travels together, but it's also a book about you cook together as a family. But Rick, you're the professional chef, and Lainey, you're his daughter. And you, do you guys have the same cooking style?
Well, what do you think, Lane?
I think not at all.
I sometimes get a little uptight, and Lainey
no.
is very relaxed in her cooking style.
I definitely think he likes to use much more exotic ingredients and much more adult-like things, and I'm definitely more laid back.
Well, tell me the pros and cons of having a father who's a chef.
The pros are definitely the good food. I mean, like,
you're never hungry,
so
right?
Much good food. And all the meals at home, and then going out to restaurants, and also growing up in a restaurant. I've made some friends I know I'll have all my life, and it's great. Maybe some of the cons are the late hours, and because we're there at the restaurant all the time, and
sometimes
it's midnight before you get to go home. But I also get to have fun. I get to hang out at the restaurant and meet new people and meet chefs, and that's a lot of fun for me.
Is the food ever just plain weird?
I can definitely say that I have tried my share of weird things, definitely.
Because I'm just thinking what passes through your kitchen probably is not what passes through most of our kitchens.
Definitely. I don't think most people have had... Let me think. Guinea hen, maybe?
How about guinea pig?
Have you guys done guinea pig?
Well, not in our home, but for this book, we went to Peru, and we cooked with a woman that I had met at a food conference that has a restaurant in Lima. Really wonderful cook. And she took us to eat guinea pig. And I have to say, Lainey was really not into it. I was into it. I thought it was one of the coolest things I'd ever eaten in my life, and it happened to be perfectly prepared. I've heard it cannot be perfectly prepared.
I'm not going to ask how you know whether or not it's perfectly prepared. But there's some great lists in the book, and one of the ones that I really found myself drawn to was the 5 cool CDs to play when you're cooking Moroccan food. Who put that list together?
Well, I did it mostly, but I would consult with Lainey, as you can expect that I had to for that. My goal was that I'm really into music, and wherever we travel, I always go into a record store, and my local host takes me through the whole thing, and I say, what are the kids listening to? What are the adults listening to? What's classic? And I bring back a whole stack full of CDs. We had so much fun in Japan buying pop music, and even down in Peru, we brought back some really cool pop bands.
And I think one of the things that you could definitely tell that he liked that section is when you get the five cool CDs plus the three bonus CDs or the two bonus CDs, which just shows how he couldn't narrow it down.
Hey, Lainey, from your point of view, what do you think parents should know about teenagers cooking in the kitchen?
Well, I think it's kind of different with me because I've grown up in this world and I've grown up in the kitchen.
Right.
But I definitely think some of my friends and knives don't mix. Knives, especially heat. But I also think that if you really push and you really try to teach them how to use the right techniques and how to do it right, mm-hmm. anybody could do it if you just need to learn and pay attention and watch your fingers.
I have to add that I always try to be around when Lainey and her friends are cooking. And I just hang out. I don't try to cook with them because I don't feel like that's necessarily a good mix. But the reason that I do it is because I love to listen to them talk. I love to listen to what's on their minds. These are great kids.
You know, Rick, some people might call that spying.
I'm participating in this thing. I'm helping out.
If he's washing the dishes, I'm fine with it.
Hey, guys, thank you.
Oh, it's so great to be with you, man.
Thank you.
You can see Rick Bayless on his PBS show, Mexico One Plate at a Time. He and Lainey's book is Rick and Lainey's Excellent Kitchen Adventures. Now, they left us with their recipe for Moroccan meatballs. It's on the website, splendidtable.org. Talking to Rick Bayless makes me think Mexico, and when I think Mexico, I think chilies. Last night, I opened the refrigerator, and I realized that stuffed on the shelves on the door were all these packages of chilies. Without realizing it, I had put together a kind of chili wardrobe. I've got a chili for every occasion. Now, here's some of my favorites. Aleppo chili. This is from Syria. Now, the flavor sparkles. It's kind of hot and sweet at the same time. Now, this is what I think of as a star chili. You let it shine. Don't mix it up with too many other flavors. It's wonderful rubbed into ribs with garlic and salt and pepper. You could do the same thing with chicken or salmon. I braise cauliflower and onions with Aleppo chili, and I throw in a little tomato. And also, Aleppo chili is great in creamy desserts like panna cotta. Paprika. I mean the real Hungarian kind. Now, it's mellow and it's velvety. I keep half-sharp paprika and the sweet on hand. Now, the sweet one is really lush. Try it in green beans and potatoes. It loves tomatoes and roasted vegetables. Spicy hot Spanish paprika is my sexy, mysterious chili. Very grown up. Try a little on root vegetables or in rice dishes, or rub it into any red meat before you cook it. Ancho chili is my everyday pepper. It's rich and it's fruity. It's got a little bite. Now, this one loves orange zest and garlic. And it's great with Asian ingredients, like mixing it up with soy sauce, sugar, and rice vinegar. It's my favorite for barbecue rub. And I love it in chocolate cookies. So get your chilies wherever there's fast turnover, because freshness is everything. And store them in the refrigerator. That way they'll keep their flavor. Music may soothe the savage beast, but I have got a much better use for it. I'm talking getting a meal on the table and the music that can make it happen. Music to sweep you into the kitchen, to cook to eat to, even to clean up to. Bob Duskus is a music guy who cooks in more ways than one. He's co-founder of Six Degrees Records. His CDs mix sounds and musicians from across the globe. Bob, welcome.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Bob, I figure you hear just about everything in your business. So what do you choose when you're actually in the kitchen?
Well, you know, I'm one of these guys who music is sort of a soundtrack to every phase of my life. I like to listen to music getting up in the morning. I like to listen to music going to sleep. And of course, I love to listen to music when I'm cooking, and not just cooking the meal. There's sort of three basic parts of putting a great meal together, and I love to sort of separate the soundtrack for those three sections. So you've got, of course, the preparation of the meal,
right,
the actual sitting down and dining,
right,
either with company or just with your family, and then, of course, the ever-horrible cleanup. So, you know, different people tend to approach these things differently, but, you know, rather than just go with the sort of tried and true, if you're making Latin food, you should play Latin music approach, I like to look at it maybe in a little bit more of an interesting way and maybe suggest that people break out of the box a little bit and think of a more creative way to provide a soundtrack for making a meal, eating a meal, and cleaning up a meal.
Well, okay. I'm thinking of prep now. You're in the kitchen. You're cutting.
Okay.
You're chopping. What do you select for that?
Well, the thing about preparing a meal is you do need to concentrate a little bit. So you can't have that hammering, you know, too beaty, too aggressive, too heavy, aggressive music. So one of the favorite things I like to listen to when making a meal is reggae music or dub music. And
okay.
I sort of like the old classic stuff. And we have a track here from a group called the Beverly All-Stars. It's sort of my favorite kind of music to prepare a meal to.
Get up, Flossie! It's a monster. A tribute to the late and great Prince Ralph Emmerdorff. Mercy, mercy, mercy. Reggae got soul. I dig for mommy.
I can do it. I mean, I've got the onion. I have got the cucumber. This is great.
And you can feel your body sort of bobbing up and down. It's sort of a nice, easy groove. And it's fun, which is a very important thing.
I can actually see myself dancing in the kitchen with this one.
Well, don't be doing it with too many sharp implements.
Yeah, okay. Now the big challenge, music to eat by, because, you know, most people go for stuff that's like elevator music.
Yeah, and I think that's a big, big no-no. I mean, obviously, a great meal appeals to all of your senses when you're sitting down to eat, with the exception of hearing, sound. So that's a very important last link to fill in with putting on the right musical selection. And, you know, putting on sort of generic background music, I mean, you would never put generic plastic ingredients in your food. You want your music to sort of equal the meal that you've prepared.
Mm-hmm.
So I like to go with jazz, classic jazz, or as we have here, some nice bossa nova music. And this is from Bebel Gilberto, who's the daughter of João Gilberto, who was one of the creators of bossa nova music with, you know, he had the big hit with the girl from Ipanema in the 60s.
Mm-hmm.
And his daughter is continuing the tradition, and she's also bringing it into modern times. She's got a beautiful new record. And what I always say, Lynn, is if you've got good music on during the meal, you know you've done the selection right. If about 15, 20 minutes into the meal, someone just turns to you and says, huh, this is really nice. What are we listening to? It takes that long to sort of register, but it does register, and it does register in a powerful, good way.
Every moment I'm near you, I try to understand. Every second I try to believe in how I am. In the silence.
Now, as you can hear, there are vocals on this track, and there's sort of a debate whether during dinner, when you're talking and you have conversation, whether vocals are distracting. You know, this is obviously a personal choice that everybody needs to make for their own entertaining experience, but playing stuff at the right volume is also key during the dining.
So you'd keep this on the low side?
I'd keep it on the low side, but not so much that it's completely subliminal.
Uh-huh. Because also, she's not yelling at me. She's very soft and very
exactly.
deep and very throaty.
Exactly.
And that's very appealing. That I don't feel that's interfering.
And that's why bossa nova is really good. It's all about sort of the seductive croon, and that works well with dining.
Yeah, I just noticed how we're talking to each other. Our tones have changed. This is pretty seductive stuff. All right, now the real tough one. I mean, what I think of a cleanup, the Toreador song comes to mind.
Yeah, well,
I need something that really is going to motivate me. What
exactly.
Have you got?
It's all about motivation. It's all about distraction. It's all about something that's going to help you get through that mess.
Uh-huh.
And again, everybody should pick what works for them. For me, I go sort of two routes. I either go with a favorite CD that you know all the words to, so you're singing along at the top of your lungs, and hopefully that's helping the time pass.
Mm-hmm.
Play little games with yourself, like if there's a brand new CD that you bought a few days ago, save it until that horrible cleanup so you've got something to look forward to. But the other way I go, and the way I go mostly, is dance music. And, you know, not kind of brainless thumping club music, but music that's got a really good sort of aggressive groove to it that helps you sort of just energize through the cleanup. And this is a track from one of my favorite sort of global groove compilations called Big Noise from a group out of the UK called DJ Food, and it's a track called Dub Lion. And I think you can definitely imagine yourself whipping through those dishes while all of this stuff is going on in the background.
All right, I'm halfway through the pots and pans already. Jeez.
See?
Yeah.
See, it's helpful.
It really is. You know, it's given me a very different take on music and food. I mean, you do think of themes. I love it. Thank you.
My pleasure. I encourage everybody to sort of tailor this to your own tastes, but think a little bit outside the box and get a little creative.
Please don't stop playing, please. That last selection was quite beautiful. May I inquire the name of it?
Bob Duskus is co-founder of 6 Degrees Records in San Francisco. Now, you can find Bob's music picks on the website, splendidtable.org. Well, it's time for our weekly trivia challenge. Now, you're going to have to brush up on your Roman mythology. Here's the question. Which god may have been the inspiration for Dr. Spock? Now, we're going to have that answer in a moment, and we're going to be opening the lines for your calls. You can reach us at 800-537-5252. I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper. You're listening to The Splendid Table from American Public Media. I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper, and this is The Splendid Table, the show for people who love to eat. The Splendid Table is brought to you by Super Target, one-stop shopping for groceries, cookware, and entertaining. You can find them online at target.com/supertarget. Now, we're going to be opening the lines for your calls in a moment. The number is 800-537-5252. But first, I have the answer to this week's trivia challenge. The question was about Roman mythology. Which god may have been the inspiration for Dr. Spock? Well, it was actually a team of goddesses, an entire chorus with backup. Carmentia declared a newborn's destiny. Now, this was based on the first thing that the child saw. Edusa helped babies be weaned and learn to eat solid food. Cunina protected the cradle and the nursery. Potina watched over nutrition, specifically liquids for the infant, and even more specific was Rumina, the goddess of breastfeeding.
Hello? Hey, what's going on? How come I never see you around no more? Where you Ben. Yeah, well, you should call me. When? Well, I get all my messages. I never got any from you.
The lines are officially open. You can reach us at 800-537-5252, and we will talk. Okay, let's see. Who is up first? We have Linda calling from New York City. Hey, Linda, what's up? What do you want to talk about?
Hi, Lynn. I hope you can help me. My mom was a wonderful cook, and she made this Neapolitan specialty, which was a calamari pie. And I have been searching for a recipe for this pie and have just not had any luck. Have you ever heard of it?
I haven't heard of calamari pie. Describe it to me. Describe it to me.
It's not unlike an escarole pie.
Yeah.
It is a two-crusted pie.
Right.
She would often make a bread dough and roll it out very thin.
Right.
And fill the pie with chopped up or sliced calamari and olives, capers, chili flakes.
Mm.
All held together with a light tomato sauce, not a very thick tomato sauce, and then bake it.
You know what I'm thinking? Because there are so many versions. And she was from Naples?
Yes.
Some of the greatest eating to be had anywhere in the world. But mm-hmm. all through Italy, this idea of taking, you know, two crusts and putting something in the middle has been improvised on forever. So maybe this isn't one of the classic dishes that you hear about all the time, but it's typical of the kind of thing you find everywhere, you know, when you start digging.
Mm-hmm.
This is my supposition, and
okay.
See if you watched her make it, if this rings true to you. She probably stewed the calamari, the squid, because if she just put it in raw with the tomato sauce and everything else, it might have gotten really tough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the key to squid, I keep saying this, because either you cook it for 30 seconds or you cook it for 45 minutes.
Okay.
You know, anything in between you could use in a hockey match.
Okay.
So what I would do is I would take olive oil,
mm-hmm.
you know, chopped onion, a bit of garlic, those pepper flakes,
right.
and tomato, and maybe a little white wine because it would never hurt, and it's used a lot in that part of the world.
And I'm sure she did that now
yeah.
that I think of it.
Uh-huh. Okay. So cut up the squid. And then I would saute it in the olive oil, all right,
okay.
along with some chopped onion.
Mm-hmm.
And when you get it to the point where it's starting to brown a little bit, mm-hmm. I would throw in a clove of garlic that you've, you know, minced and mashed. Mm-hmm. Saute that for a few minutes. I'd add a little bit of basil and oregano.
Okay.
Add the white wine. If you're using a pound of squid, for argument's sake, I'd do a half a cup of white wine. Simmer that gently down. And I do all of this in a big skillet.
Mm-hmm.
And then after you've simmered down the wine, add your tomatoes.
All right.
And let that simmer very, very gently for maybe half hour, 45 minutes until the squid is almost melting.
Oh.
Now, let that cool. And by the way, by cooking in a big skillet, it'll thicken.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? If it looks like it's going to get too dry, add a teeny bit of water to it and keep it covered for a little while. But when you get done, you want to have a pretty thick sauce.
Mm-hmm.
All right.
Right.
Then what you do is cool it down, make your bread dough, okay? Make it with a fair amount of water so it's going to roll very thin fairly easily, and that'll make it nice and crisp when you bake it.
Oh, terrific.
Yeah. Roll it out really thin, spread that squid. Do it the way you remember your mom doing it. Was it your mother or your grandmother?
Oh, my mother. Oh,
your
and my grandmother as well.
And your grandmother.
Sure.
And then add the olives and the capers and the other things. You see?
At the last minute.
And then put the crust on. And I would bake that in a pretty hot oven. I do like 400 degrees. I think the whole idea is she was doing squid stew.
Okay? All right. Thank you so much.
Hey, enjoy. And thank you.
We love your show.
Hey, thank you.
Bye.
Take care, Linda. You can reach us, guys, 800-537-5252. You know, you can take almost any stew like that. Any stew. You know, vegetables, meats. Put it between a crust. Bake it off. Everybody thinks it's a party. It's a dynamite idea. Okay, who's up next? Let's see. We have Catherine on the line from Pittsburgh. Hey, Catherine, what's up? What do you want to talk about?
Hi, Lynn. I found something at Whole Foods in the bulk food section that, you know, they had this little thing telling about all the great nutritional benefits of it, but no idea what to use it for. And it's called TEF, T PEFF.
Oh, boy. And it looks like grains of sand, right?
Yeah. What the heck is it, and what do I do with it?
Well, one of the things that it is it's one of the main grains of Ethiopia.
Okay.
Yeah, and for those of you who have never seen teff, it's kind of a dark color, right?
Mm-hmm.
As I remember, and it is fine as a grain of sand, and it is a grain. And it has a lot of nifty nutrients in it, and it's very hard to grind because it's so fine. But in Ethiopia, they do grind it into a flour, and then they combine it with water, and they let it naturally ferment for several days, and they make this great pancake in a large pan. It's called injera, and it's almost a little spongy, and that is what your food is placed on. It's almost like a plate when you eat in Ethiopian style, and all the dishes, all the different curries or vegetable mixtures will be put on that, and you tear it off and eat with your hands. But for me and thee, okay, think of it as the makings. First of all, think of it like wheat germ. In so many words, you could take teff in small quantities and add it to cookies, add it to pancakes, add it to bread doughs, add it to biscuits. So let's say for every cup of flour, if you want to throw in a quarter of a cup of teff, you know, in something that's not going to rise a lot, you'll get a lot of nutrients and a real nutty flavor.
Well, fantastic.
Yeah. Now, the other thing you can do is you can make it almost the way you would polenta.
Mm-hmm.
And salt it, and you can add seasonings to it, and you can eat it as a side dish. And that means you use, let's say, for every cup of teff, you would use 2.5 to 3 cups of water.
Wow.
And it cooks in 15 minutes or so.
Okay.
You know, until it's tender. And you can make it as thick or as soft as you want it, but if you think of it as polenta or potatoes, and one of the things I love to do, I treat myself to some good butter, mm-hmm. and I saute garlic in it, and then mix it with the teff. You know, garlic and butter with anything is going to make it taste good.
That sounds great.
So it's really nutritious, and it's kind of fun to work with. Store it in the refrigerator, though, because I think it can get a little stale if you don't.
Okay.
Hey, enjoy.
Hey, fantastic. Thank you.
You are welcome. Call us, guys. 800-537-5252. There's all kinds of great grains out there that, you know, you get a little gun-shy because you don't know what to do with them. Teff. Fascinating to work with. Let's see, who's up? We've got Sylvia calling from Rupert, Idaho. Is that right, Idaho?
That's correct.
All right.
Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome, Sylvia. What do you want to talk about?
Well, my doctor put us on a diet, my husband and I, so we've been looking for different fishes to try. And I noticed a fish called tilapia.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it's not very expensive, but I'd like to know a little bit about its origins and perhaps how to cook it?
Well, okay, it's really popular, as you know. It's reasonably priced. And what I like about tilapia is that it's one of those fish that has a mild sort of sweet flavor, and it tends to cook up on the little bit on the firm side. And those two things mean that it can go with almost any ingredient you like. So if you just take tilapia and saute it in a little bit of olive oil, you know, salt and pepper it lightly, saute it in a little bit of olive oil with some onion in the pan, perhaps, and some garlic and some of the zest of a lemon, it's fabulous. As far as where it comes from, I think it's originally from around North Africa, but now most of it is farmed. But unlike a lot of farm fish where they cause problems from an ecological point of view, tilapia don't. So tilapia is okay on a lot of levels, you know, from an ecological point of view and a nutrient point of view and also a cost point of view.
Sounds delicious.
Yeah, it really is. I mean, you can do Mexican salsas with it. You can do things like just, as I said, something very simple where you do it with olive oil and garlic and, you know, onion and then squeeze lemon on it and it'll be very tasty. You could bake it with other, you know, with vegetables, with quick cooking vegetables. So it takes to a lot of different kinds of preparations.
Wonderful.
Okay.
Thank you.
Enjoy.
Bye.
Take care. Reach us, guys, at 800-537-5252. Hey, I have got an apple pie tip. A lot of people probably thought about this before I did. But I realized that when you if you add dried fruit to fresh fruit, it enhances the flavor and it brings out another dimension. So the next time you're making an apple pie, cut up the apples, but pick up some dried apples too and just cut them into little nuggets. And instead of raisins, for instance, toss the dried apple in with the apples and the spices and the sugar. You'll get this nice sort of punctuation mark of apple. Call us, guys, 800-537-5252. We have Patty calling from St. Louis, Missouri. Patty, what's up? What do you want to talk about?
Hello, good friend, my cooking maven over there.
Well, hello, dear.
I'm desperate, and of course that's why I'm calling you. I have a very dear friend who is ill, and her only diet is soup. And after several weeks of chicken and vegetable and beef soups, she called me because she knows I love to cook and said, Patty, please, please come up with a soup that's different from all of these. So I consulted my 1967 Joy of Cooking.
Right.
And there on page 149 is fruit soup from Scandinavia, a cherry fruit soup to be served either cold or hot. Well, I thought, terrific. But as I read the recipe, it calls for 2 cups of red wine. Now, this was written in 1967, so maybe the selection wasn't as great as today, but I haven't a clue of what kind of wine to serve with this cherry soup.
Well,
it's the basis of the soup.
Exactly, and it's one of the ways that fruit soups are made. You know, they're made with white wine or red wine, and in the case of cherries, obviously red wine. Okay, we're going to just use logic here. You want something really fruity and not super heavy. Like, you don't want Cabernet, you know.
Okay.
You don't want to have even a Zinfandel. I think a fruity Merlot, you know, a Merlot, or even, you know, the other thing you could use, too, is something that's a really fruity rosé. And yeah, you really could. And I hate to say this, but I think even, you know, the Scandinavians are going to laugh their heads off, but this might actually be a place to use white Zinfandel, because white Zinfandel has a slight sweet taste.
No kidding.
Otherwise, I would go for a Syrah, a Merlot, a Beaujolais would be good. You want something light-bodied and a lot of fruit to it. And then you're going to have to balance it, because if the wine has any great acidity, you may want to add a tad of sugar. But that you'll know when you start to play with it.
So when I taste it, I'll be able to tell whether
Exactly.
Oh, excellent. Well, I just went through the wine shop, and I just was lost. So this is a tremendous help for me. Thank you so much for being there. You're terrific.
Hey, Patty, thank you. I'm blushing. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
You can call us, 800-537-5252. That's a great tradition, fruit soups. A little white wine, a little red wine, some of the fruit. Cook down the wine maybe with a bit of spice. Stir in a little bit of fruit to get the flavor, and then the last minute you put in all the fresh fruit. You can add cream if you want, but you can do this just with spices and a little pinch of salt, maybe a tad of sugar. Anyway, you know how you're always hearing about wine pairings, you know, what to eat with which wine? Well, how about what to watch with which wine, as in reality TV? Now, while those celeb wannabes eat worms or wait to hear you're fired, what is the perfect match for you to be sipping while you're sitting there safe on your living room couch? Well, we're offering this challenge to a serious wine expert. She is Karen McNeil, and she's author of The Wine Bible. We've got Karen on the phone. Karen, thanks for talking with us.
My pleasure, Lynn.
Okay, Karen, here's what I'd like to do. I'll name the show. You tell me the wine I should be drinking with it and why.
Sounds like fun.
All right. How about The Apprentice?
Wow, The Apprentice. What would life be like without Donald Trump? You know, when I think about The Apprentice and I think about the Donald, I think about masculine, big, lots of ego, dark and devious. And, you know, there's one wine that's exactly like that, and that's Petite Syrah.
Sounds so feminine.
I know. You know, petite is, the funny thing about the name is that it's not petite at all. It's a really big, powerful, broad-shouldered, masculine red wine. It's perfect, by the way, with grilled steak.
Which sounds like what the Donald would really like to eat.
Absolutely.
Okay. Survivor, the newest Survivor.
Survivor. Well, you know, Survivor is, of course, the show that started it all. And for Survivor, you know, you've got that sort of ruthless, savage aspect of every mm-hmm. person who wants to be a survivor. And there's one wine that's really like that, too. I think of it as almost the primal scream of wines. It's also a red wine. It's called Cote Roti, and it's made from Syrah grapes in France's Rhone Valley. Very unleashed, not a polite wine at all. It's a survivor.
Sinewy, I would imagine.
Sinewy,
because
yeah,
all those people are so lean. My God. Well, okay, growing up Gotti.
Growing up Gotti. Well, you know, I'll try not to make any you-know-what begins with an M kind of jokes. Mm-hmm. But Victoria Gotti really likes to sort of flaunt, I think, the bad girl aspects of her personality.
Yeah.
And, you know, she could be on The Sopranos without skipping a beat. And there's one white wine that is also the bad girl of white wines because it's sassy and untamed and wild and has just this crazy, unpredictable side, and that's Sauvignon Blanc. It's just about the most opposite to Chardonnay that a grape variety could get.
Does it have bad hair extensions as well?
Yeah, well, it you know, chipped nail polish, tattoos, mismatched earrings, and stiletto high heels. That's Sauvignon Blanc.
Karen, I hope we haven't demeaned your expertise, but thanks so much.
Well, wine is supposed to be fun. My pleasure, Lynn.
Thanks.
Karen McNeil is author of The Wine Bible. Her new series on PBS is Wine, Food, and Friends with Karen McNeil. Now, you can find her TV wine picks on the website, splendidtable.org. Well, that's the show for this week. Thanks for joining us. Remember, you can call us anytime. The number is 800-537-5252. And until next week, let me leave you with this quote from Woody Allen. He said, "Who bothers to cook TV dinners? I suck them frozen." The Splendid Table is brought to you by SuperTarget. Everything you heard here today and so much more can be found on our website, splendidtable.org. And while you're there, be sure to register for our free weekly newsletter, Weeknight Kitchen. Every week we send you a new recipe, shopping, and technique tips. You can register for it right on the site, splendidtable.org. Additional support for our program comes from Starbucks, from coffee farmer to their roasters to your barista. Craft, creativity, and passion are poured into every cup. Our producer is Sally Swift with help from Jennifer Russell. Our technical director is Jennifer Lubke. Our website is managed by Judy Graham and Julia Schrankler. Have a great week. Join us next time. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Lynn Rossetto Casper.
American Public Media.